Flight into Icing, and what really happened on board Flight 3407. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature. Thanks for the download today. I'm normally joined on Mondays by CFI Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot, to talk candidly about accident and safety issues. Bob is just returning from a brief vacation, so while he couldn't be with us today, I thought I'd reprise a best of Bob from about 2 years ago, when our conversation turned to flight into known icing and Bob's early thoughts on what happened to Continental Connections Flight 3407. Bob, as always, thanks for taking some time for our listeners today.
Thanks, Paul. My pleasure.
You talked about making good sense about flying in sub-freezing clouds. I know that this is a somewhat of a hot-button topic that has come to be over the years associated with the name Bob Miller. I guess the question I'm left with after reading this is, how do we choose the right freezing cloud?
And I'm going to turn that question around and ask you another question. How do we determine the right level of low visibility? How do we determine the right level of turbulence when we go out? I put icing conditions or sub-freezing clouds in the same category as poor visibility, the same category as turbulence. That is, like turbulence, like visibility, like sub-freezing clouds, there are ranges of conditions that run from nothing to severe. Mm-hmm. And so recently, as you know, the FAA has redefined their definition of what they call known icing conditions. Up until very recently, the FAA took the position that if the cloud temperature was below 32 degrees Fahrenheit, 0 degrees Celsius, that fact alone, sub-freezing clouds, constituted what would be regarded as known icing conditions. Translated, if the outside temperature was below 32 degrees and we were about to penetrate a cloud in a non-known ice certified airplane, we are on the verge of violating FAR 91.9, which deals with the aircraft certification limitations, which would preclude that airplane from going into known icing conditions. What I've tried to point out, and I think to the credit of the FAA, they've taken a different stance on what constitutes known icing conditions and said it is not temperature alone that defines known icing, but there are a whole series of factors, all of which come down to what the pilot's judgment is when he gathers and assesses all of the information pertaining to those clouds. So there are ways that we can tell before getting into a cold cloud whether it contains icing, and there are ways in which to deal with cold clouds that do contain icing that if we do a bit of advanced planning are perfectly safe. On the other hand, if we do not do advanced planning and we're not properly trained, then we're playing Russian roulette with a condition that can, in fact, kill. So it's not a question of black and white, can we or can we not go into cold clouds. It's much more a condition of grays, and just like it is when we're about to enter areas of turbulence or areas of low visibility.
Well, now, Bob, you have a really interesting diagram in the edition of Over the Airwaves that came out for this month that talks about these additional meteorological factors. Temperature between 14 and 32 degrees Fahrenheit, high humidity, air rising at a particular rate, and the size of the water droplets. How many of these things can we detect? Or are we waiting for technology maybe to devise a way that we can have something mounted on the outside of the airplane that will detect this particular combination that leads to icing?
Well, each of those conditions, water, vapor size, temperature, disturbances in the atmosphere all count. But I also used a metaphor or a reference to a totally unrelated profession when I asked my dentist, for example, what safeguards he takes when treating a patient that has AIDS. And his quick response was, I treat all patients as if they have AIDS. And I translated that back to, let's, as pilots, consider all sub-freezing clouds to contain lots of ice. Now, they all do not contain lots of ice. But if they do, and we regarded them as same, that still doesn't preclude us from going into them, but there has to be some immediate back doors available to us. And this is really part and parcel to the whole subject of what we're talking about. If, for example, we cannot get to VFR conditions within minutes after penetrating known icing conditions, then don't go in there. Or if we cannot get to warmer air within minutes then don't go into those clouds. And both of those conditions must exist above the minimum vectoring altitude. But even before going into the clouds, there are certain things that we can look at. For example, if we're about to take a trip from point A to point B, and somewhere along the trip we're going to pass through a low pressure area or a front, beware. The likelihood of light to moderate, even possibly severe icing is very high. On the other hand, if we're going to go from point A to point B, and we look at the surface analysis, and we're making no frontal passages, we're not passing through any low pressure areas, the air is very stable, then the likelihood of encountering airframe icing in conditions like that are significantly lower. So we can begin to assess just by a careful pre-brief and understanding what conditions do precipitate ice or cause icing. Combine that with having back doors that are readily accessible, we can get greater utilization of out of our airplanes. Now, Paul, as I say this, we have to contrast this with the black and white definition. You can't go in the clouds if they're below freezing.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as flight instruction is concerned, that black and white definition says, I don't even want to talk about it, students. If it's sub-freezing, don't go there. And of course, that kind of instruction just leaves the pilot totally unprepared and untrained in the event that something different happens than planned along that route of flight.
Well, and as you point out, it makes an airplane not of enough use to justify its costs.
Well, sure. It turns it into a part-time seasonal vehicle, and we can't have that. And what's more, now we have a whole new line of airplanes coming out that presumably are icing capable. We have TKS systems now coming out on the Cessna 400. We have TKS on the Cirrus SR-22. In fact, they have the certification now on the SR-22 for known icing conditions.
Mm-hmm.
But that does nothing to help the pilot who inadvertently penetrates moderate to severe icing. Even those systems will not keep him safe. And unless he has some good foundational instruction on how to deal with those conditions, then he can't go there. And then if he can't go there at all, why did he spend $40,000 on a TKS system? You know, all of this begs the question, we must recognize icing or clouds, cold clouds, in the same context as we look at turbulence and as we look at low visibility. There are shades of gray, and we have to be prepared to deal with each of those shades.
All right, Bob, when we come back from the break, let's talk about Flight 3407. That's the Continental Connections flight operated by Colgan Air that crashed on approach to Buffalo in February of 2009. I know you have some definite thoughts on both the accident and the media coverage. Bob Miller is my guest. We'll be back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Plack, and you're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Freedom through control. Cirrus has completely reinvented the personal aircraft and the entire experience of owning a personal aircraft. It's a bold new take on private aviation that we call Cirrus Flying 2.0. You set the schedule. You chart the course. You're in control.
Piperjet.
Pipermatch.
Global expansion.
Meridian, Mirage, Matrix, and more.
With so much happening at Piper, how can I possibly keep up?
Get informed. Get involved. At facebook.com/Piper Aircraft.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot, talking about icing and in particular now about Flight 3407, which was that regional turboprop that came down short of the runway in Buffalo, landed on a house in Clarence Center. 49 lives on the plane lost, one on the ground. And Bob, I know you have some very definite thoughts on what has followed in the media. No less than Jim Hall, former chairman of the National Transportation Safety Board, has called for all turboprops to be grounded in icing conditions. And while a lot of attention has been paid to the fact that he's the former NTSB chair, very little attention seems to have been paid in the media to the fact that he now works for a law firm specializing in aviation litigation. An entire category of aircraft has been you know, painted with this brush that they're not safe in the winter or not safe in icing conditions and should be on the ground. And the fact is another Q400 also coming from Newark on the same route at almost the same time made a perfectly safe landing, you know, moments later on the same runway. I guess, you know, the other questions I guess involved are, is there anything inherently wrong with turboprops in ice? And, you know, Jim Hall was very critical of these, you know, pneumatic de-icing boots that he calls 1930s technology or antiquated technology. You know, what's the deal there?
Well, if Jim Hall were to have his way and you carried that to the ultimate end, then no, then following that logic, no propeller driven aircraft with pneumatic boots ought to be allowed to operate in sub-freezing clouds. That is ludicrous. Absolutely ludicrous. Now, the point that I think somewhat tangential to Jim Hall's point is I would argue that it probably takes a bit more piloting skill to fly a turboprop Q400 through icing conditions than it does to fly, you know, an RJ or any turbofan airplane, simply because there's less margin for error in this type of airplane. And it, unless he is telling us that, you know, airline pilots are basically inept at flying anything that isn't fully automated, that they do not have the ability to manage something as complicated as a Q400, then, well, that's a different issue altogether, and that goes back to the standards that we have to uphold for flight crew proficiency and competence. There's nothing wrong with the airplane. In fact, I'm a little surprised that Bombardier hasn't jumped on, and perhaps they have, on the issue of the cockpit voice recorder. You know, nobody wants to go out and point fingers, and certainly nobody wants to go out and hang this on the pilots. Goodness knows, we pilots get blamed for almost everything that takes place in the air. And in many cases, we should, because there was an oversight. But I have to go back to the basic question, Paul. Why was this airplane permitted to slow to such an extent that it was near stall before there was any pilot intervention? Why wasn't the nose lowered minutes earlier than the stick shaker went off? Why wasn't there an increase in power just to maintain that precious flying speed that was decaying, likely because of ice?
Well, hopefully we'll find out some of these things, Bob. And in the meantime, should we feel safe flying these things in the winter?
There's no question. There's no question that we should feel safe as far as the aircraft is concerned. Now, you know, this raises in my mind, you know, what level of crew training are these regional providers, regional carriers given? Now, that's the subject of a whole other discussion that you and I might have. But that's that issue here, not the airplane themselves.
All right. Well, Bob, as always, thought-provoking stuff. We will catch you again next Monday.
Thanks, Bob.
Since Bob and I had this conversation 2 years ago, the training and experience levels of regional airline pilots in the U.S. has, of course, received a lot of scrutiny. CFI Bob Miller's monthly newsletter can be found at overtheairwaves.com. We expect Bob back with us for an all-new feature next Monday. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.